You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
The biggest game of the week in college football is Arkansas and Texas A&M in Arlington, the Southwest Classic. It has been a while since I think we've had a Razorback game that's had this kind of build up to it. There have been times where Arkansas has played in AP top 25 games, you know, in the last 6 or 7 years. But in all of those years, you know, you had losses that led up to it that never made you feel like it was just a big game for Arkansas. You think back to 2015, they played in a top 25 game after they lost by 53 to Auburn. You don't have any blemishes leading up to this one for either Arkansas or Texas A&M. Clay Henry of Hogs Illustrated, Scotty Bordelon of WholeHogSports.com. Clay, I think you might have to go back to maybe the Cotton Bowl against Kansas State in the same stadium about 10 years ago, the last time that you really had this kind of anticipation, I feel like, for a big Razorback top 25 matchup.
Yeah, and this one has just happened in a matter of a couple of days. You know, bowl game, you have, you know, 3 or 4 weeks to build up to it. This is I think it should be a lot of fun. And I think that Arkansas fans and to everyone that I've talked to thinks that Arkansas has got a great chance to win. And the way it's been in this series, you kind of like, well, I don't think they're going to sell any tickets because the fans don't think they're going to win. I mean, that was the attitude that I had building up to each one of those games. And now the attitude is, well, how many seats will be left? Because I think Arkansas fans are going to show up.
You can always tell how big a game is. All three of us can, by the amount of radio interview requests we get during the course of a week. I've already been on in Tulsa this week. I've been on in Springfield. Clay, you've been on in Nashville. I know you've got requests from elsewhere. Scotty, I know you've got something coming up in Atlanta. It seems like, you know, everywhere around college football, they're talking about this game. This is the game that I think all the eyeballs are going to be on Saturday, this one in Notre Dame, Wisconsin at Soldier Field.
Yeah, it's a really big one. And Tuesday morning, I was finishing up some morning stuff, and I got a text from a number that I didn't recognize. And I read the text. It was from 1080 The Fan in PDX, and I had to look up where that was. I had no idea where it was. It's in Portland. And people in Portland, Oregon, are paying attention to this game. And then when I'm driving down on Saturday, about 3 hours in, I'll be on the radio in Atlanta. There's just a ton of interest in this game. And I thought, you know, after Arkansas took care of business last weekend, that there was a chance that game day would come, but they're not. Obviously I understand why they're going to Chicago and Soldier Field, but this is the best game of the weekend, I think, hands down. And it's really intriguing because, you know, if Arkansas, I think, is going to snap this streak, this is probably the year to do it. The defensive line is, I think, the difference maker in this game. And you combine that with a quarterback who's played, you know, roughly less than two games. You know, I think that's a recipe for a streak buster.
Clay, I've always felt like this game has been close in part because I'm not sure that Texas A&M took Arkansas seriously. There have been a lot of Texas A&M teams that were a lot better than Arkansas. I mean, think about the 2018 and 2019 teams where Arkansas didn't win an SEC game and they had a chance to tie or take the lead in the final minute, I think, of both of those games. A&M, I think, is Arkansas's got their attention this year, given the ranking, given what they did to the Longhorns a couple of weeks ago. What do you think about that dynamic?
Yeah, I think so. And that's probably a good point, Matt. I think that there were some problems with those A&M teams that really kept them from excelling on the national stage, with the exception of when Johnny Manziel played. They were average at quarterback. Kellen Mond was involved in a lot of those games, and I think what we saw last year from Kellen Mond was the finished product after Jimbo had worked with him a little bit, but he made some really bonehead plays to keep Arkansas in the game. I'm talking about throwing interceptions or taking sacks when it looked like he had receivers open. So sometimes quarterback play can even things up. And I think that was the case in some of those A&M Arkansas games.
Sam Pittman said that he thinks that this game is going to come down to line play, you know, who can whip who along the line of scrimmage. I think every football game comes down to line play, but some games are more intriguing than others. Arkansas's defensive line has played really well this year. I think we all think their offensive line has played as well as they have in probably 3 or 4 years, at least through the first three games. But these next 2 weeks, you know, these are big tests, because outside of Alabama, I don't think you're going to find a better collection of offensive and defensive linemen than you probably will with Georgia and Texas A&M. A&M's a little bit more experienced or inexperienced on the offensive line, really experienced, really good defensive line. What do you think about this game in the trenches?
There's storylines with both teams on both fronts. I mean, with Arkansas, it's injuries. Is Ricky Stromberg and Dalton Wagner, are they going to play? What's their availability? If Stromberg and Wagner are able to play, you know, what percentage are they? On Arkansas's defensive line, I mean, they've been really, really impressive. Like, to me, the most impressive part of Arkansas's defense to this point in the year, outside of the way that they gang tackle, I think is the production of the guys over the ball. Ridgeway, Isaiah Nichols, Torian Carter have been terrific. I mean, Torian Carter in three games this year has matched his tackle total from last year, and he's made a really big improvement. Isaiah Nichols and Ridgeway have been really good in pass rush. And then you go to A&M, they're pretty young offensive line, I think, in some areas. They've got a couple injuries. I think Laden Robinson is a little bit of a question mark. And if you look at Pro Football Focus, I think he's, you know, he's one of the top graded offensive guards in the SEC to this point. And then looks like there's first round talent on A&M's defensive line. And so everywhere you turn, you know, when you're looking up front, I mean, there's storylines there, there's difference makers there. And, you know, Sam is 100% right. I mean, and he knows it starts up front. And I think that's obviously where the game's going to be won or lost, I think.
Yeah. I think to kind of spin off of what Scotty just said, if you look at Texas A&M, and I thought the story last year, there were two great offensive lines in college football. One was at Alabama, had two or three players that were on first team All-American teams, both tackles in their center. And then you look at Texas A&M, and they were just terrific. All five guys had played for 3 years, 4 years in some cases. Kenyon Green was the exception, who's the lone starter back this year. He played guard last year, was in All-America. They put him at tackle. He wanted to play tackle because that's where you make your money at the next level. But their thought was that they had good talent this year, but it started with Green and Luke Matthews, who's the son of Clay Matthews, a former NFL player. But Matthews hasn't played. He's been hurt. He's practiced a little bit this week. So they've got two true freshmen that are playing behind Matthews, Foster and I think Wyckoff. And they've tried to play those guys a little bit both, and neither one of them have been able to do anything. And Isaiah Spillers, who's their great running back, really frustrated, and he came as close last week to pointing fingers at the offensive line and says, we're just missing details up front. Well, they're missing blocks. They're not details. And people are hitting him at the line of scrimmage, and he wasn't used to that last year. I mean, he ran against air for 3 or 4 yards against Arkansas, and I think that's – so where A&M's offensive line is, and I think, Scotty, you laid it out well, Arkansas's defensive line, can they get any pass protection with Trey Williams and Zach Williams and the guys they're going to run in off the edge? But I think those nose tackles will give those freshman centers a real battle. And that's something I'll be watching early in the game. And then how will Trey Williams be able to chase that quarterback, who I don't think he's very good out of the pocket, Calzado, but he's okay in the pocket. And I think that gives Trey Williams really a good chance to tee off on him.
Yeah, when Calzado's not pressured, or when he wasn't pressured against New Mexico last week, his adjusted completion percentage was like 50% higher than what it was when he was pressured. Just one other note on A&M's offensive line. We talked to Torian Carter earlier in the week on Tuesday, and I asked him about how his season's going, what he thinks he's doing better to, you know, see his production increase. And then I asked him, I was like, what do you see in A&M's offensive line? Are there any, you know, weaknesses that you've spotted that you think you can exploit? And he stopped himself from saying something. He said, I almost said something, And then he gave you kind of the coach speak, the player speak line that, you know, they're a good group and we're just excited to play Saturday. But if I think they've identified some weaknesses in that front. And if Torian Carter is excited about it, you know that, you know, guys like Trey Williams and John Ridgeway, they're going to be chomping at the bit.
Wreak some havoc. Yep. I think that's the key to this game. And it should really make it be a fun game for Grant Morgan, Hayden Henry, and Jalen Catalan and Bumper Poole. Those are the playmakers. They're going to be running free.
If Ricky Stromberg and Dalton Wagner cannot go, you've got at least two, if not three players who are playing outside of, you know, where they won starting jobs. You'd probably have Brady Latham at right tackle. You would have Ty Clary most likely at center, and you would have Luke Jones at left guard. Now, Jones had a really good preseason battle with Brady Latham for that left guard position. Clay, how do you think those three players hold up in those positions against A&M's really good defensive front?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think Wagner and Stromberg will play a little bit, but I think at some point in the game, you're going to have those guys trying to hold up. And I don't worry about that group of five playing, because they all have started before or played significant roles, and Luke Jones prepared as a starter and worked some with the first team this fall. I think they're okay. It's beyond that, and I think that's what you have to always look at is what happens when you get an injury, because you're into their depth pretty good. You're going to go to the eighth best player at that point, and who would that be? Would it be Shane Clinton at a guard? Would it be would they have to move one of those other guys out to tackle and bring in another guard? I mean, that's the, you know, is it Tykeus Crawford that's next up? I don't know, and that's the question, is what happens in a game like this when you have to bring in your eighth best lineman? So, you know, maybe it's Jalen St. John plays left tackle and Myron Crawford flips to right tackle. I'm not sure. But that's the if about this game, is where's your depth? And I'm sure Texas A&M is in the same predicament in their offensive line. They've got some guys down. You start going to your eighth and ninth offensive linemen, it's a different ball game.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Visit them on the web at gocallbud.com.
Bud Anderson is proud to be the official heating and cooling provider for the Arkansas Razorbacks. This partnership will support all Razorback athletics for over 400 student athletes across 19 sports. Woo-pee!
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
Clay, this week, Arkansas's football family lost one of its most valued members. Floyd Sagely was a 1953 All-Southwest Conference end. He also played defensive back on those teams. Really a wide receiver is what he was. In fact, in 1953, he had the second best season at the time of any receiver in Razorback history. Jim Benton, the great Razorback from the 1930s, had the record up until that point. You knew him well. What do you remember about Floyd Sagely? Because a lot of people who are listening probably never saw him play and probably never got a chance to know him like you did.
Well, first of all, he was, in the view of my father, was the most finely conditioned athlete to ever play at Arkansas. Never missed a game, never missed a practice, and that's football or basketball. He was just a giant hands is the term that I always heard. You know, he got his hand on the ball, then it was his. And that was in football or basketball. And I got a chance to play golf. I was 17, was paired with him in the State Golf Association stroke play tournament at Hot Springs. And he had not been playing golf terribly long, picked it up. But, I mean, the great athletes, they pick up golf and they figure it out really quickly. And he hit these majestic drives. And this is with old persimmon wood drivers and then with his irons, you know, high and soft, just never seen anything like that. He wasn't great around the greens. He was really busy in his oil and gas business. By the way, he was one of those guys that got involved in that Arkoma field like Jerry Jones and really did well. Was a land man and then built his own company. Then it got into real estate and was probably, you know, one of the top guys as far as wealth in the Fort Smith area. And he was very generous and he helped a lot of projects along the way and was very well respected in Fort Smith. One of the nicest men that I ever met. I would get letters and phone calls and they were always kind. He praised your work, wanted to tell you what he thought. You know, he was really close with Frank Broyles, played a lot of golf with Coach Broyles, and he would be one that Coach Broyles would share, you know, what he was going to do, how he was going to do it, and maybe ask for a little bit of advice from Floyd. But yeah, whether it be church work, Hardscrabble Country Club, you know, he was active in the community and was a man that held up his end of what he thought Fort Smith should be and push for it. And I guess as far as Van Buren athletes, as good as anyone ever was, and was a state champion there in both football and basketball. And that says a lot for Van Buren.
I spent a lot of time in and around Fort Smith. And if you're in Fort Smith, you know the Stagely name, just a giant, really, I think, in that community. As I was helping Bob Holt for the obituary, compile the obituary after he passed away on Tuesday, I went back and found some stories that had been written about Stagely. And one of them had been written by your dad in 1985 for the Arkansas Gazette, whenever Stagely was inducted into the Arkansas Sports Hall of Fame. And he said that the reason there were padded goalposts in Razorback Stadium was because of Floyd Stagely. In 1953, their regular season finale, they played Tulsa. He ran a post route and he ran right into the post and said it caved in his cheekbone, and that they tried to get a player to come in for him and he wouldn't let the sub come in, that he continued to play. I think he caught six passes that day against Tulsa. Said that night that the team trainer sterilized a corkscrew, opened up his face, and popped out the cheekbone. And 2 days later, Stagely also, as you said, was a basketball player. He was the last Razorback who started 3 years on the football team and the basketball team, was in basketball practice by Monday. And on Thursday of that week, got elbowed in the face and the cheekbone caved back in. Stagely said that that was the only injury that he had from his sports playing career. And he spent, you know, a good bit of time in the NFL too. He said it was the only injury that he had from his playing career that still bothered him all those years later.
Told me some Clyde Scott stories. One day I was down at Hardscrabble and he said that when he was in the NFL, of course, NFL players at that time, they didn't make a lot of money. I mean, they all had jobs in the off season, and he paired up with Clyde Scott's insurance business in Little Rock and was a representative, sold insurance in Fort Smith for Clyde Scott. And Clyde taught him the art of sales. And he says, in other words, you lay your cards on the table and then you just be quiet. And the first man to speak is the one that cracks. And if you'll just be quiet, eventually the other guy will weaken his stance and sign your contract. So he said he always thought that, everybody was – that Clyde Scott was a real soft-spoken man, but he had an art of how to close it, at a contract table.
Moving back to the A&M game this week, The Aggies are going to be without a couple of receivers, Scotty, and this is kind of notable. Hezekiah Jones, I don't think he has played this year. He's been dealing with something nagging. But really the big loss is that Caleb Chapman's not going to be able to play. Chapman was the one who tore his ACL in the Florida game last year. Remember, he made that great game-tying touchdown catch late in that game against Florida. Was their leading receiver in that game. Didn't get to play against Arkansas last year. They didn't see him last year. And then there's some thought that Anais Smith, who's kind of their most versatile player, they'll line him up in the backfield, they'll line him up at receiver. He does a lot of things in the return game for them that he might not be able to play. This is certainly something worth watching this weekend.
Yeah, it's definitely noteworthy. And especially, you know, considering A&M's working in a quarterback who doesn't have just a whole lot of in-game experience. And you take, you know, possibly a couple of his weapons away, that makes him probably a little bit less uncomfortable. And then you add on top, you know, potentially guys on protecting him, you know, they might not be at full strength. Then Anais Smith, I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was the last time Arkansas and A&M played in AT&T Stadium. It just seems like Anais Smith has just given Arkansas fits just with his speed. And I remember he scored a touchdown, I think maybe right before halftime in 28 or 2019. And it almost seemed like it kind of, you know, shifted momentum for Arkansas or for Texas A&M in a first half that Arkansas played pretty well in. So he's a valuable part of that, their skill position groups. And also, you know, those three guys potentially not being 100% is pretty big for Arkansas secondary. And, you know, against Georgia Southern, you saw a couple of times a receiver getting loose deep. And, you know, Georgia Southern is not Texas A&M. And even though A&M's work playing a young quarterback, he's less likely to miss those receivers than a Georgia Southern quarterback who's, you know, he's, you know, more focused on the option game and the run game. So Calzada probably less likely to miss those open receivers than other quarterbacks. Arkansas's secondary, despite those guys being questionable or not 100%, they're going to have to be on their toes. And A&M still got some talented guys, like Watermeyer is a problem at tight end. And, you know, Isaiah Spiller, you know, even at the end of the Colorado game, he caught a pass out of the backfield that you know, shifted the game in A&M's favor. So A&M's passing game is still going to be tough, you know, even if those guys are limited a little bit.
Maybe not a great comparison. Anais Smith reminds me a little bit of Percy Harvin at Florida, just to kind of give you an example of how the Aggies use him. All right, prediction time this week. Not a lot of huge games in the SEC. Of course, we said Arkansas and Texas A&M. That's the big one. Number one, Alabama hosts Southern Miss. Number two, Georgia goes to Vanderbilt. Got to believe that the top two teams continue to roll this week. Early morning kickoff in Starkville, Clay, LSU at Mississippi State.
Yeah, I like Mississippi State in this game. I think that the Tigers still haven't figured it all out. And I think that Mississippi State will prevail. And I think the word is that Stingley, the great defensive back at LSU, went off the field yesterday injured, and that's a bad sign when you're playing a passing team like Mississippi State.
Yeah, and it's weird that, you know, we kind of don't have just a whole lot of confidence in an LSU secondary to stop a passing game that, you know, Mississippi State will throw the ball down the field, but a lot of those throws that Will Rogers or whoever their quarterback makes is, you know, it's kind of dinks and dunks, and you just – for some reason, I just don't have much confidence in LSU secondary. So I'll go with Mississippi State too. I think what did Will Rogers? He completed what, like 55 passes last week, like snap or broke an SEC record.
Tim Couch's record.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's set in Little Rock, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of passes to have to defend. So you're going to need everybody in that secondary, and LSU doesn't have that.
Of course, LSU, that was the team that Mississippi State threw for 623 yards on in the season opener a year ago. That game's at 11 a.m. on ESPN. Same time on ESPN2, an out-of-conference game, Missouri's at Boston College.
I honestly don't know much about Boston College, to be perfectly honest with you. I think Missouri's got plenty of skill guys. You know, Tyler Beatty, I think, is having a pretty good year. And, you know, I think Missouri go up there and get a good non-conference win.
Yeah, I think Boston College has got a decent team, but I like the SEC in this matchup.
I think Eli Drinkwitz said on the teleconference this week, Boston College hasn't given up a touchdown in the first half of any game this year. That I figure that'll change this week.
Look out for BC. They've got a lot of returning starters back. They played Clemson tough, North Carolina tough. They played Notre Dame tough a year ago. That game's in Boston. We get some Boston rainy weather tomorrow morning. I think Missouri might be in for a tough game in the Northeast. A game that Arkansas has really taken away on CBS this year. It used to be that Tennessee and Florida was one that you would pencil in on CBS every season. They're going to play a night game of the Swamp tomorrow night. Clay, who do you like?
I like Florida. I mean, I can't believe that Josh Heupel has really gotten Tennessee straightened out. As many players as they lost in the transfer portal last year. I guess you could say that Tennessee could be off. I mean, Florida could be off a little bit, have a little bit of less enthusiasm. That's the whole deal about the SEC is, can you play, you know, big games back to back to back, like Arkansas is fixing to play. They're going playing Texas A&M away from home, then going to Georgia, then to Ole Miss. That's murderer's row. Florida will have to see if they can sustain their enthusiasm to play the Vols. I like Florida, but I'm not sure they can cover.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Clay. If it's a 2-touchdown spread, I think Florida might cover, but it might be one of those backdoor deals that ends up on Scott Van Pelt's bad beats, maybe on Monday. I still can't believe how Florida lost to Alabama the last weekend. Just the botched 2-point conversion play is just, that's still sitting with me, and I have no dog in the fight whatsoever. But I think Florida, you know, playing at home at night, I think that'll help them cover.
Tomorrow night on ESPN2, Kentucky at South Carolina. Shane Beamer got introduced to a real defense last week in Athens. He's going to see another really good defense from Kentucky, I think, Scotty.
Yeah, I'm probably going with Kentucky, and I've, you know, read pretty good things about their quarterback, pretty accurate. I just don't think South Carolina just doesn't really have the pieces right now to instill much confidence. I'll go with Kentucky.
I got Kentucky too. I think they're just much stronger defensively than South Carolina.
South Carolina's got some quarterback issues too. The graduate assistant is out. They're going to start Luke Doty for this game against Kentucky. All right, finally, Texas A&M and Arkansas in Arlington. Big game, as we said, you know, the highest or the best game this week in terms of the teams that are ranked highest in the AP poll. A&M's won nine in a row in this series, but when they played in Arlington, it's been really close. Five of the last six games there have been decided by 7 points or less. Clay, do you think this is the year the Razorbacks can break that streak?
Yes, I do. But I think it's close. I think it's, I picked it 17-16. You know, we do our predictions for the magazine on Sunday morning, and I still feel the same way, that the defense are probably a little ahead of the offenses for this game. Texas A&M's defense certainly ahead of their offense. So I think it'll be a low scoring game, but I think Arkansas by one.
Yeah, I picked Arkansas 24-17, trying to hit the nail on the head 2 weeks in a row. But I've been really encouraged the last couple of weeks, the way that Arkansas's defense has ran to the ball, swarmed the ball. And one of the key things, I think, when you're looking at just the way the defense is playing, is that all the assisted tackles on that defense, it's not just one guy getting to the ball. Like, it's several guys, and it's making the guys who are, you know, trying to make a decision on who came up with the tackle. That's a really tough job. When you're watching Arkansas play defense right now. But I think Ridgeway in the middle of that line, and possibly Trey Williams too, you know, as long as he stays composed, doesn't pick up any more penalties, I think Arkansas's defensive line makes a difference, and they make Zach Calzada pretty uncomfortable.
I went back and forth on my pick because I'm a little worried about Arkansas's offensive line. If they don't have Stromberg or Wagner, or if those two are limited in what they can do because I know how good Texas A&M's defensive front is. I went ahead and picked Arkansas. It's at a neutral site. Texas A&M struggled in a neutral site game with Colorado a couple of weeks ago up in Denver. I think the Razorbacks have got the motivation. They've got the hunger to end this winning streak. And certainly they played better competition to this point in the season. They looked a lot better against Texas than A&M did in their only game against a Power 5 team. So I think Arkansas is going to be able to break that streak this year. I think this is a good Arkansas team. I think this is a team that, you know, people are asking the next 4 weeks. They play ranked teams against A&M. They play Georgia. They play Ole Miss. They play Auburn. Are they going to fall off the map? I don't think they are over the next few weeks. I think they'll hold their own quite well in those games. Go to WholeHogSports.com. We'll have a preview of the Arkansas A&M game. Every angle you can imagine, we've got covered there. Check out Clay's top 10 keys to the game. He leads it with some of the lessons that he learned from Floyd Sagely. We'll be back next week to recap the game and look ahead to the Razorbacks game with Georgia in Athens. For Clay Henry and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. Have a great weekend.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.